One. And welcome back, folks, to Monday, May 20th, 2024's edition of Truth versus News. And what an edition it's been. We've shown a lot of false things that the news is saying, and it looks like America is really going downward. We're going to be turning into a leper colony, even being rejected by the rest of the world that has standards much better than ours, it looks like. Isn't that right? And I guess I'll let you lead on, Jim.
Nice metaphor Scott has introduced of America as a future leper colony.
Yeah.
Rather disturbing and provocative. Meanwhile, the pro-Trump conservative Slovakian PM was shot multiple times in public. He'd stood up against the Ukraine war and opposed a WHO global pandemic accord, two prime suspects in the attempted assassination. According to your reports, he was alive, transported by helicopter to a hospital in Bratislava. Here's a video of him being dragged. You can see him right here being dragged to his car. Gateway Pundit learned from a friend in Europe. He's wounded but expected to live. Here we have more about it. Only days after he formally and publicly rejected the WHO Global Pandemic Accord. After he was appointed PM of Slovakia, immediately ended military aid to Ukraine. Meanwhile, he was a thorn in the side of Ukrainian funding and EU-NATO admission and the WHO pandemic treaty and an avid supporter of Slovakian sovereignty. Yesterday, this was then, a lone gunman attempted to assassinate the pro-Trump prime minister of Slovakia. Fico is reported in critical but stable condition after five shots fired at point-blank range. AP cited unconfirmed media reports that it was a 71-year-old retiree and amateur poet who shot him. They suggested his name was Jerzy Cintula, a left-wing activist member of the Movement Against Violence. How's that for irony? A member of the Movement Against Violence who shot him five times. A video, Shapiro says, show up, they beat up Cintula giving a brief statement. This would be the suspect here. Meanwhile, Fico had become the chairman of the Smear Party in 1999, described as left populist, noting Fico has been compared to right-wing politicians like Viktor Orban of Hungary, whom I greatly admire. ABC reported, his return to power caused concern among his critics that he and his party, long tainted with scandal, would lead Slovakia away from its pro-Western course. Probably a good idea. He vowed to pursue a sovereign foreign policy, promised a tough stance against migration and NGOs, and campaigned against LGBTQ+rights. Sounds like my kind of guy. While Fico's opposed to gay marriage, currently recognized in Slovakia, but not against the law, the extent of his LGBTQ policy seemed to focus on stopping the promotion of sexual ideology in schools. The outlet, France 24, quoted a social media post where he said, 73 genders? Sick. Convert 12-year-old girls to boys? Sick. France 24 even goes so far as citing actions taken by Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis. Allegation that he created a criminal group and misuse of power eventually dropped sounds strikingly similar to Trump's RICO charges in Fulton County challenging the results of a corrupt election. How interesting is that? Meanwhile, antiwar.com reports Robert Fico expected to survive. While he was shot multiple times, he's expected to survive. I guess in the end he will survive, said the Deputy Prime Minister Thomas Tavares. He's not in a life-threatening situation at the moment. Earlier, the defense minister, Robert Kalina, spoke with reporters at the hospital where he was being treated and said he was fighting for his life and underwent 3.5 hours of surgery. Fico, who's 79 years old, was shot greeting a crowd. The interior minister said a 71-year-old man detained for the shooting and that the initial investigation found a clear political motive. Pico and his smear SD party won election last year, campaigning on a platform against military aid to Ukraine in opposition to the NATO proxy war against Russia. When he took office, he fulfilled his pledge to end military aid to Ukraine and blocked an arm package approved by the previous government. Slovakia had previously sent Ukraine Soviet-made MiG-29 fighters, making it the second country after Poland to provide war planes. Fico has also been critical of other NATO countries signing bilateral security deals with Ukraine and discussing the ideas of sending their troops. We see huge security risks in the bilateral agreements that are likely to be conducted with NATO and EU members that want to send their troops to Ukraine. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, the same opposition to the LGBT rights that FICO demonstrated, it was the same that Yanukovych demonstrated, the Ukrainian president, before he was overthrown in 2014. People really need to understand this LGBT rights agenda is the tip of the spear of the globalist, leftist, Zionist, Talmudist agenda. It breaks up the family, it causes insanity in the individual, and it leads to the annihilation death of white Caucasian Western people, because that's who is pushing it, implementing it. America, Canada, Australia, Britain, Germany, not Africa. Africa's kicked the United States out because it doesn't want a part of this. Ukraine rejected it, and of course they did the coup d'etat. Middle Eastern countries reject it. Asia rejects it. So the only nation that pushes this sexual insanity is the United States, and of course the Israeli Talmudist masters and their puppets in the EU. So you know, FICO, the Slovakian president represents I think the majority of the sentiments of the European people. The elites are going to be coming into an increased hostility stage. But look at also what's happened in the last 2 weeks. You've got the attempted assassination of FICO of Slovakia. Then you've got a homosexual transgender person in Texas running over a man, killing him, then stabbing him 9 times as this transgender black person with a blonde wig straddles over his corpse and kisses him. And he was arrested. Then you've got this death of Raisi and others. There's just some strange things that are happening in the ether. But again, I think this is drawing sides. This is drawing lines. And all of the sentimental, traditional, religious, family-oriented people in the world are departing from the side of the United States and going towards Russia and these conservative value countries. And it's got nothing to do with government. It's got everything to do with the long-term survival of the species. And like California, men and marriage and families have a difficult time in California because it's so hostile towards men in general. So that's one of the reasons California has lost a lot of its traditional people. But I think the same thing's coming to Europe, Jim.
Brian.
Well, Alex Jones and Slovakian reporters are saying that the shooter did not act alone, meaning that they're indicating that conspiracy is afoot under this situation. Meanwhile, your mainstream media all across Europe is applauding the assassination attempt and hoping to God he doesn't come back stronger than ever, because like we said, he was a big opponent of the World Health Organization's plans to take over the world. And he got, less than a week ago, he got he made a big speech about it. He's a powerful member inside NATO, carries a lot of influence, and the mainstream media and the usual suspects want him dead. So again, multiple assassination attempts seem to be taking place. We've got the Iranian, just like Scott mentioned, and others. What are they afraid of? They're afraid of the resistance. They're afraid. I'm telling you that the New World Order is behind this. The same people that run, that pull the screws, are shutting down all of the dissenting voices that come from the high levels of the political class that don't fall in line. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, but I can tell you somebody seems very, very nervous because I suspect that this World Health Organization next pandemic provision rollout will be even more draconian than before. And if you take a look again at what's happening in China, people look, I'm not saying that they're against communism, but they're for democracy. And the reason that they're for democracy more than ever before right now is because of those heavy-handed COVID restrictions that ended in the destruction of people's lives in fires because they were literally welded inside their buildings. They weren't allowed to go out. And that's what the Chinese people are seeing. They're seeing that the Communist Party, the corruption has allowed the flooding to take place. It's allowing fires. Bad things are happening. A three-year-old boy died in the arms of his father after he was literally locked inside of his apartment and the child couldn't get medical help. And that's what's going on in China. You've got a cry out from the populace, finally. I expected it to happen years ago, but it's starting to finally happen. And over in Europe, of course, your mainstream people aren't letting the mainstream media tell them what to think anymore. And that's really seems to be the new trend right now. So I expect that it's going to have large ongoing ramifications in terms of how the world votes in the next election, assuming that the powers that be haven't been able to fix them all.
Wow.
Fascinating.
Rough.
Clearly a good man. We'll hear more from him in the future, no doubt.
Prime Minister Netanyahu over the weekend told an Israeli news outlet when he was asked how long the war could take, he said he thought it could take 10 years. I mean, is that realistic or is that how long he wants to stay in power?
Well, the power question I can't answer. I'm sure he'd be happy to be appointed for life. But I don't think it's a matter of can it last that long. I think it's more along the lines of signaling to everyone that he's not going to stop until he's comfortable that he's achieved his goals and aims. And I still don't think anyone has been straightforward about those aims. This has nothing to do with what happened on 7 October. 7 October was horrific, although, again, lots of people like me question just how it occurred and how it came about because of the extraordinarily good surveillance and security that's normally around Gaza. One wonders why they put this music festival in such close proximity to a place that was clearly not reinforced with Israeli defense forces. They had a minimum of ready deployable forces in the region. Why would you do that? So I think there are lots of questions that have to be answered on that score. I simply think that what happened on 7 October was used to justify something that the Israelis have wanted to do for years, which is to complete what they started in 48 and what continued to some extent in 56 and later on in the 60s, which is to completely rid itself or rid Israel of its Arabs. That's what this is about. I don't understand why nobody will simply step forward and admit that. I guess if you do, then you have to admit that what is happening is mass murder and expulsion. And people who are friends of Israel don't want to say that. Well, I was always a friend of Israel too, but I'm willing to say it because that's the only way I can characterize it.
Well, Colonel, you're evidential. You have an international reputation for intellectual honesty. You're not a politician. You're a military, retired senior military person who appears on these programs to analyze things. Most people do not have that level of integrity. But I mean, is it realistic that the Israelis can achieve their goal, the elimination of Hamas, the elimination of Hezbollah, and from the river to the sea?
Well, that depends less on us and more on the people that live in the region. Again, and I've said this before, you have this axis of resistance, as it's called, that includes very well-armed and disciplined militias in Iraq, Hezbollah, obviously, as well as the Houthis. But these are absolutely, without question, not enough. These are not going to be enough to destroy the threat that Israel now presents to Islam and the people of Islam that live in the Middle East, or for that matter, anybody that stands in their way. So I think the question has to be submitted to General Sisi in Egypt, to King Abdullah in Jordan, to the Saudis, to the Emirates, to the Turks and Mr. Erdogan, as well as to Iran. Those are the major powers. Those are the principal actors. What are they going to do? Right now in Egypt, there are people that actually believe the International Court of Justice has real influence and power. You and I both know they have no power. And so there are many Egyptians that are saying, well, at last we see movement. No, there's no movement. And the Egyptians are the ones with a force. It may not be the best force in the region, but it's numerous enough, large enough, that it could do enormous damage if it chose to do so. And thus far, the Egyptians have sat on their haunches. The same thing is true in Jordan and the Arabian states. Question is, what will the Turks do? They're historically the leaders of Sunni Islam. They still see themselves in those terms. What are they doing? I don't know.
Does the axis of resistance have a central control or command? Is it coordinated?
I think there's a certain amount of harmonization that goes on. I think it would be a stretch to suggest that there is any one person or one body anywhere in the region that controls everything. I know that's something the Israelis like to impute to the government in Tehran, but I'm not sure that's justified. I think that they communicate with each other. They try to orchestrate their actions to the extent that they're able. But beyond that, no. And again, this is the issue. Where is the leadership? I mean, it's sort of imagine landing at Normandy in France in 1944 and no one's in charge. You have British armies, Canadian armies, American armies, French, Poles, and others who are with you, and everyone has their own agenda. Everyone is operating independently, although they periodically communicate. You're not going to get very far.
Prime Minister.
I think that's very, very thoughtful between Judge Napolitano and Colonel McGregor. Meanwhile, as responsible statecraft reports, only our enemies commit war crimes. A half-baked report highlights a double standard U.S. officials use for Israel. On Meet the Press Sunday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken struck back at claims the U.S. officials let Israel dodge American laws regarding weapon transfers. "We don't have double standard," Blinken said. "We treat Israel, one of our closest allies and partners, just as we would any other country, including in assessing something like international humanitarian law and its compliance with that law." Of course we do. Luckily for observers, Blinken left a substantial public record against which one can test that claim. His own department statements and actions undercut the alleged impartiality. Indeed, all available evidence indicates U.S. holds Israel to a far lower standard than any other country. Take the State Department's long-awaited report on Israel's compliance with international law in Gaza, which came out late last week. The administration found Israel had likely used U.S. weapons to commit war crimes, but said there wasn't enough evidence to draw clear conclusions about specific incidents. The upshot is, from the Biden admin perspective, there's no legal reason to cut off U.S. arms transfer to Israel at this time. In Blinken's telling, any more forceful conclusion would have been impossible, given the incredibly complex military environment in Gaza. It's very, very difficult in the heat of war to make a definitive assessment about any individual incident. But that very, very difficult operating environment didn't stop State from drawing conclusion about Hamas action in the very same report. In a three-page defense of Israel's campaign, a feature not present in similar reports on other nations, U.S. officials found with great clarity that Hamas uses human shields, that Hamas intentionally targets civilians, and that Hamas consistently violates the laws of war. Observers will have to conclude the U.S. has somehow attained more definitive inside information about Hamas than Israel, one of America's closest military partners. This is in part why an independent panel of legal experts and former officials said the report was at best incomplete, at worst intentionally misleading, in defense of acts and behaviors that likely violate international humanitarian law. Once again, the Biden admin has stared the facts in the face and then pulled the curtain down, said the panel, which include two former senior officials at state. Meanwhile, they're seeking to eliminate any journalistic coverage.
Banned. Al Jazeera gets shut down in Israel, just as Israeli forces move into Rafah. Is Italy's prime minister, Giorgia Meloni, out to turn state-owned television into state-controlled television? And halfway through India's six-week-long election process, we examine the narratives both in the mainstream media and on the social side. This past week offered a brief moment of hope for the approximately 1.5 million Palestinians trapped in Rafah, supposedly the last safe space for civilians in Gaza. Hamas had accepted the terms of a ceasefire agreement. It looked like lives would be saved. But on Tuesday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the proposal fell short of Israel's key demands, and now an assault on Rafah is underway. Coinciding with all of this has been the closure of Al Jazeera's news operation in Israel. Our news coverage, TV broadcasts, and website are all blocked there. That measure may shield Israelis, at least temporarily, from the horrors that are being inflicted on Rafah, but it will not stop this network from covering the story. What it does signal to the world, though, and the Netanyahu government's allies abroad, is that Israel's so-called democracy is not what it's cracked up to be.
The Israelis are trying to sort of portray this kind of as like an end game, that this is sort of the last bastion city in the Gaza Strip, where they're claiming that the military operation is not complete until the army goes in with troops to what they describe as dismantling Hamas's remaining infrastructure. The reality and practice of this is that Rafah is right now the only hub for Palestinian life and society and refuge for people who've been displaced for the past 7 months from the northern strip all the way down to the south.
Rafah was supposed to be the red line that Israel would not cross. Its forces have corralled around 1.5 million Palestinians there, more than half the surviving population. After 7 months of punishing civilians with bombs and bullets, you can add another betrayal to the mix. Having advised those civilians to take refuge there, the Netanyahu government now calls Rafah the last stronghold of Hamas. And within a day of rejecting a ceasefire that Hamas had agreed to, that would have freed every remaining Israeli hostage, Netanyahu sent in the troops for reasons that may be far more political than strategic.
So his desire to continue this genocide is both because he's genocidal, but also because he is a survivalist and he wants to make sure that he remains in office. The bigger issue is that it seems to be that there are no red lines. Back in March, we heard President Biden say,
but there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
And then he very quickly backtracked from that. They've made a mockery out of the international legal system as we know it. They've made a mockery out of the Genocide Convention. And the fact that Netanyahu continues to be able to do whatever he wants to do just shows you how genocidal he is and how genocidal the United States is as well.
Of the four interviews in this piece, you will notice that only one of them is via webcam, the one we did in Israel. We had no choice, given that on the eve of going into Rafah, the Netanyahu government banned Al Jazeera from the Israeli airwaves and from reporting from there. In announcing the police raids on Al Jazeera's offices, Israel's communications minister called the network a threat to Israeli security because it broadcasts statements issued by Hamas. What Al Jazeera really is a clear and ever-present danger to the Israeli narrative. It has...
And that's, of course, because it's broadcasting the truth. Meanwhile, the ICC seeks arrest warrant for Netanyahu and Golan. The International Criminal Court chief prosecutor will seek arrest warrants for Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Golan, as well as for Hamas leaders Monday. That would be today. The charges against Netanyahu and Golan will include causing extermination, causing starvation as a method of war, including the denial of humanitarian relief supplies and deliberately targeting civilians in conflict, Karim Khan told CNN's Christiane Manapour. Charge against Hamas terrorist leader in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar, Chief Ismail Haniyeh, and Al-Quds Brigade Armed Wing Head Dotmuth Deep will include extermination, murder, taking of hostages, rape, and sexual assault in detention. In a statement public following the CNN interview, Khan's office said he had reasonable grounds to believe Netanyahu and Golan bear criminal responsibility for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed since October 8, 2023, the day after Hamas terrorists allegedly massacred 1,200 people, mostly civilians. However, the independent judges of the International Criminal Court are the sole arbiters as to whether the necessary standard for the issuance of warrants of arrest has been met. A panel of three justices from the ICC pretrial division will now consider Khan's application for the arrest warrants. If the court in The Hague greenlights the warrants, it would constitute an unprecedented anti-Semitic hate crime, Netanyahu warned last month after reports surfaced of Khan's intentions. The possibility that they will issue arrest warrants for war crimes against IDF commanders and government leaders is a scandal of historical magnitude, stated the PM. 80 years after the Holocaust, of course, the international bodies established with the goal of preventing another Holocaust are considering denying the Jewish state its right to defend itself. Hear the violence playing? Netanyahu noted this marked the first time a democratic country, except it isn't, committed to international law, except it's not, is defending itself from accusation of war crimes while at the same time facing existential threats. The Palestinian Authority has declared its acceptance of ICC jurisdiction over alleged crime committed by Israel. However, Jerusalem and the United States, I would add, do not recognize the court's jurisdiction over its military and political actions in the Gaza Strip, Judea, and Samaria. Khan served as the ICC chief prosecutor since February 2021. When elected with the support of the United States, the ICC would not be considering issuing arrest warrants without the approval of the Biden admin, Israeli media reported in late April, citing senior sources associated with the court. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, I wouldn't agree with the court seeking U.S. Approval or discussions for arrest warrants. I think this is a monster that's outgrown the United States. The United States created the International Criminal Court, among others, but yet never accepted jurisdiction, never accepted its authority. Palestinians have. The Palestinian Authority accepted the International Criminal Court. And I believe probably the Israelis did too. I'm not entirely sure. But I know Netanyahu is protesting it, screaming like a stuck pig and saying that they will fight it in every way. But I think what this really does is it compels every country that is a member of the International Criminal Court to issue arrest warrants so that if any Israeli minister, politician, military person listed on the warrants winds up in a country that is subject to the jurisdiction, and they flag the individual, they can be arrested. They will be arrested. And this could apply, too, to the United States. I've said before, the arrest warrants and the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice, what they do is allow the rest of the world to turn away from the United States. They allow the rest of the world under compulsion to say, don't come to our country, or else your leader or your person is going to be arrested. This isolates the United States. It isolates Israel. And the fury and the hubris of Israel is only going to continue. They're not going to let up. Netanyahu's agenda is clear, complete annihilation of everything in Gaza so that Jared Kushner can go in and build condominiums, as he's speculated before. And I think this is something that's going to end bad for everyone except the rest of the world. This is quickening them to turn away from the United States and using the International Criminal Court as a convenient excuse. Jim?
Brian?
The fundamental problem here from an American perspective is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or the AIPAC, which is the largest lobby in Washington, is my understanding, in terms of the number of people who accept money from them. They're not registered as a foreign agent. Their conferences have the finest in terms of prime ministers, presidents, secretaries of state, leaders of Congress, and others. Chuckie Schumer is one of their best friends, and he runs all 100 senators in terms of he's the majority speaker for the senators. AIPAC is one of the largest lobbies in America. They're not registered as a foreign agent, which they ought to do. America continues to allow dual Israeli-American citizens to operate with impunity, where people ought to be selecting one or the other and then swear a loyalty oath to one or the other. But we have all these guys operating in the middle. And because they're operating in the middle, they're able to take money from the synagogues as well as from the AIPAC. That's the pressure that controls Congress in terms of anybody who speaks out against Israel will be basically bully-whipped into submission. And they've shown this over and over again, dating all the way back to 1985, where the top foreign affairs committee guy, I think his name was Chuck Bertrand or something like that, this goes way back, started speaking in terms of America first, Israel second, and they had him boosted from his position on the foreign affairs committee. So they wield a tremendous amount of power, and they wield a tremendous amount of dual-mindedness in terms of who are we really here to deal with? Are we really here to take America first, or are we really here to do Israel first? This is the fundamental problem that we have. And of course, we're not a signer on the International Criminal Courts. So even if they do accept the indictment as recommended against Netanyahu, neither is Israel. All it's going to do is lock Netanyahu into a place where he can't travel to any of the nations where they are signatories on the International Criminal Court. They'll never arrest him. In America, you can see why every politician speaks out pro-Israel everywhere all the time, and so does the mainstream media.
But of course, symbolically, it will be a significant gesture to have occurred, and I certainly applaud it. Meanwhile, get this. Washington, D.C. is training how to get illegal immigrants registered to vote in local elections. Judicial Watch announced it received 13 pages of records in response to a FOIA request from the District of Columbia. Explain to illegals and other non-citizens how they can register to vote in local elections. The records came in response to an April 12, 2024 FOIA request for 1. Material presented or provided at the train, 2. Communication advertising promoting the train, and 3. Material provided participant attendees after training. On April 10th, 2024, DC held a train event entitled Non-Citizen Voting Education Virtual Training, in which DC announced non-citizen voting would begin in 2024. The PowerPoint explains non-U.S. citizen residents of the District of Columbia can vote in local elections under the Local Resident Voting Right Amendment Act of 2022. Non-U.S. citizen residents can vote in district elections for offices of mayor, attorney general, chairman, or members of the D.C. Council, members of the State Board of Education, really district, or advisory neighborhood commissioner. Non-U.S. citizens cannot vote for federal offices. To register to vote in D.C. as a non-citizen, you must be at least 17 years old, 18 by the next election, maintain residency in the D.C. for at least 30 days prior to the election in which you intend to vote, not claim voting residence or right to vote in any other state, territory, or country, nor have been found by a court to be legally incompetent to vote. You must provide proof of your address in D.C. at an early vote center prior to election day or at the polling place assigned to your address on election day. In 2023, the D.C. Council amended the D.C. Election Code of 1955 to expand the definition of the term qualified elector to include otherwise eligible non-citizen residents, including illegal aliens. D.C. law went a step further, though, by extending the franchise to undocumented immigrants. The district's action was opposed by congressional Republicans, but they could not override the measure. Illegal aliens and not a citizen should not vote in any elections, Judicial Watt President Tom Fitton said. That Congress allows the votes of citizens to be legally stolen by illegal aliens in our nation's capital is inexcusable. Meanwhile, and this merely makes me wonder whether our government is run by morons, Senator Cruz urged DOJ FBI to investigate whether foreign adversaries are behind the Gaza war protests in the U.S., as though protesting genocide were not an appropriate, rightful thing for an American citizen to do. Senator Ted Cruz has called for U.S. federal authorities to investigate whether foreign actors are promoting contentions within the U.S., including recent protests over the war in Gaza, taking place on U.S. college campuses and other venues around the country. During a Wednesday episode of his personal podcast, The Verdict, Cruz noted a recent report by Network Contagion Research Institute alleging connection between the Shut It Down for Palestine movement and the Chinese Communist Party. The NCRI report specifically alleged that convener organizations that formed the SID4P protest movement, People's Forum, the International People's Assembly and Answer Coalition, serve as the conduit through which CCP-affiliated entities have effectively co-opted pro-Palestinian activism in the U.S., advancing a broader anti-American, anti-democratic, an anti-capitalist agenda. If you look at this report from NCRI, it details how China is spending millions, upwards of potentially 100 million, funding these protests occurring on campuses, shutting down bridges, shutting down airports, Mr. Cruz said. And you might think, okay, what does China care about Hamas? What does China care about Israel? And the truth of the matter is they don't, but they care about America. They care about tearing our country apart. They care about chaos and fomenting dissent and dissension that paralyzes our country. During the podcast, Cruz also noted a recent article by the New York Post alleging ties between Manolo de los Santos, a 35-year-old New York-based activist, involved in recent pro-Palestinian activism, and Cuba. Mr. De Los Santos was born in the Dominican Republic and now works with a People's Forum. The NCRI report also states some Western intelligence assessments indicate Samadon, an organization that has endorsed SID4P, is connected to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. The U.S. government has designated FPLP as a foreign terrorist organization. The German government banned Samadon from operating in the country in October. The NCRI report derives its claims that Samadon may be linked to PFLP from a November article in the German newspaper Deutsche Welle, which itself cites unnamed intelligence sources for the alleged Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine connection. NTD News reached out to Samadon for comment on these allegations, but received no response by press time. The group did, however, published a statement criticizing the German government's decision to ban them. If the German chancellor and his government support the genocidal war on Gaza being carried out as we speak, it can be no surprise that they also seek to criminalize the ability of Palestinians and people of conscience to act against that war, to speak out, to organize, and to express support for the Palestinian people's drive and struggle for freedom, justice, and liberation, Samadon's October statement reads. Samadon had said in October it was committed to challenging the German government's ban. Cruz and 15 other Republican senators signed a letter last week calling on IRS to begin investigating whether various nonprofits involved in organizing protests over the war should lose their tax-exempt status on the ground their activities may constitute prohibited support for terrorist organizations. The Republican senator took his calls for investigation a step further during his podcast, urging the DOJ to also begin investigating these activist groups. The Department of Justice should be investigating this. The FBI should be investigating this. We've got money coming from communist China behind these protests, behind these anti-American, anti-Israel protests. We have money coming from organizations with close ties to designated terrorist organizations. And so, whether it's Hamas and Hezbollah, whether it's affiliated allies of theirs, whether it's Iran pushing this, whether it's communist China pushing this, the FBI ought to be all over it. NTD News reached out to the SID4P convener for comment, and Mr. Cruz called, but they did not respond. Also, Mr. De Los Santos without a reply. Scott, your thoughts.
Well, you know, this paints a very interesting iconic moment, or ironic moment, I should say, of perfect hypocrisy demonstrated by the West, because on this side, you have Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton and a variety of other agents for Israel that are in violation of the 13th Amendment and should lose their American citizenship and should be kicked out of the country. Because they're taking bribes, they're taking all sorts of consideration for exercising their political decisions in accordance with Israel, not with the accordance of the Constitution of the United States. But what's most interesting is when Ted Cruz, who I consider just a clown and an idiot among so many other clowns and idiots in Washington, D.C., but he is now saying things like the student protests may be organized by foreign governments, foreign intelligence, you know, Gaza protests, whatever that means. So essentially you're saying it's a bad thing for a foreign entity to be influencing American college campuses' expressions of protest. Is that your story, Mr. Cruz? Miss Blackburn, Marco Rubio, that's more of an accurate reflection of him, and others. Because if that's your position, then how in the world, unless you're a complete disgusting hypocrite, can you be objecting towards Georgia's law that they just passed, outlawing and demanding the revelation, disclosure of any foreign intelligence, foreign government that is erecting connecting non-governmental organizations or anything else, Soros organizations or lobby groups, anything that gives money and tries to influence the domestic politics of a nation. Georgia just passed that law. They are not going to allow foreign entities to micromanage or fund or lobby laws, policies of their country. And the president of Georgia, born in France, a French citizen too, has vetoed this law passed by the people, passed by their legislature. But that law is going to override her veto because the majority of the people in Georgia, as well as all over the world, are offended by the United States, which is really the only country that does all of this, meddling in the internal affairs of other countries. So all of this is again coming back to haunt the United States and the actions of hypocrisy where Ted Cruz can get up there and like a rooster start crowing about the International Criminal Court or Gaza protests on college campuses, but yet then threaten with sanctions of the Georgia government or a color revolution, the Georgia government, for passing a law designed to expose foreign interference in their political life. Again, you couldn't label the United States a greater hypocrite and disgusting schizophrenic when it comes to mental decisions, because this is going, again, it undoes anything that can be applied to the United States as a sane nation. It's no longer a sane nation with people like Ted Cruz and the others making these sort of conjectures and try and make laws, Jim.
Especially when Israel's influence is so blatant and grotesque and all-encompassing. Outrageous. Brian.
Well, I imagine Israel is behind a lot of the generation of these non-governmental organizations that get all this money to help all these border crossers come on in and destroy this nation.
Yep.
Meanwhile, this week, Byron Donalds had to present a bill to, along with Troy Nels, I believe, to try to restrict the government from issuing identification cards to all these illegal immigrants. And you know what those identification cards are going to be used for: voting, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, everything else that comes along under the sun. I'm sure they're going to be given some sort of immigrant ID number and allowed to get driver's licenses as well. But of course, there is still some patriotism left in Congress, and so they're preventing this from taking place. But this is all a step in the wrong direction for anybody who loves their nation and loves their borders. Unfortunately, at this point in time, it appears every single member of Congress, with the exception of a few, have sold out interest to whatever the winds of change and the winds of disruption are going to be bringing along. It seems like the Democrats get more power out of disruption and destruction, and there's more money to flow around to fix problems that they create. Our government is constantly creating problems that need to be fixed, and more money needs to be spent. All this debt, all these illegal immigrants, it's only a matter of time before our culture is completely destroyed and we're left with nothing but the tatters of hyperinflation to try to use to buy seed and plant crops to feed your family.
You got that so right, Brian. So right. Meanwhile, UCLA attackers exposed. Guess what? Meet the violent Zionist agitators LA police haven't arrested yet. Gray Zone updated a dossier dealing with identities of the Zionist hooligans who assaulted UCLA anti-genocide student protesters. It was sent to LA police, but no arrests have been made. The cops still can't explain why they disappeared for hours while the mob attacks. April 30th, 30 people were injured when a mob of Zionist hooligans savagely assaulted the pro-Palestine UCLA encampment shortly before midnight. For over 3 hours, local and campus police stood down as a mass thugs assaulted students, journalists, even officers of the law with firework volley, pepper spray, and metal pipes. Multiple attackers have been identified by community members on social media. To date, there have been no arrests. Zip, zilch, nada, none. A pro-Israeli goons. Here we have a black reporter assaulted by pro-Israeli supporters. Justify that. 30,000 mother effers. 30,000 counting. Pro-Israel supporter. What an awful thing to say. 30,000 dead, more to go. The Greystone obtained a dossier composed by anonymous sleuths claiming involvement with UCLA student protests, which identifies some of the attack perpetrators. Students emailed the doc to the UCLA admin and police, as well as Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. It contained detailed information about the identity of those who were filmed carrying out wanton violence. Los Angeles area police have arrested droves of students protesting Israel's U.S.-backed genocide, accusing over 40 students and journalists of conspiracy to commit burglary for attempting to sit in on school's ground. How absurd is that? Yet local authorities have made a grand total of zero arrests of the coordinated Zionist mob assault against UCLA anti-genocide protesters. The LA Times has reported local law enforcement is relying on sophisticated facial recognition to hunt down the attackers. But as the UCLA dossier makes clear, many have already been identified, matching their identities with social media profiles. Here are some. Lyle Assyrian, who uploaded video directly from the scene, was seen assaulting reportedly pro-Palestinian demonstrators with a tennis racket. In an interview with the New York Times, Assyrian claimed without offering a shred of evidence, he was called a dirty Jew and doused in pepper spray. That made me start breaking down their barricades. Nori Mahusa, footage from before show Mezahuda was a constant presence on the periphery. According to the email from student activists, he was involved in planning violence continuously. UCLA officials were likewise warned about him continuously. The author suggested his actions would constitute hate crimes, given that he referenced a desire to attack those who were not his Jewish brothers. A photo of him taken shortly before the violence erupted indicated he had foreknowledge of the assault and may have helped to organize it. Later that evening, a mass Mahusa was recorded attempting to destroy barricades while a compatriot with a speaker blasted Mana Mantira, a Hebrew language children's song, Israeli soldiers at blade while torturing or taunting captive Palestinians on camera. Despite being caught red-handed by several security officers, despite nearly getting into a fistfight with another guard in a separate incident, Mahusa was allowed to remain in the area. Tom Bibian, footage uploaded by he himself, revealed he personally participated in the attacks. A day after the assault, he posted a video highlighting his involvement with a caption boasting, "We rushed the terrorist encampment." Another asked Bibian to clarify his role. He said, "Yeah, I'm in this video." Apparently confident he would face no legal repercussions. He reportedly spent several years participating in questionable cryptocurrency schemes while part of the Los Angeles NFT community before being exiled following accusations of indecent exposure and sexual harassment. A website representing the Bibian Family Philanthropic Foundation indicates his family regularly donated not only to vehemently Zionist groups like the zealous and insular Shabbat, ultra-Orthodox cult, but to liberal outlets like Democracy Now. Here we have Max Mumenthal. Violent Zionist thugs wave the flag of the Messianic Shabbat cult on the way to assaulting anti-genocide protesters at UCLA. A man seen waving the Moshiach flag of the militant Zionist Shabbat organization was identified as Ronnie Yudah, an Instagram account belonging to the virtually unknown pro-Israeli rapper Judah Fire, indicates Yehuda is an LA resident. The email said the 35-year-old provocateur had returned to the UCLA campus on multiple occasions since the attack, despite any affiliation with the school, despite claimed students that had alerted police to the presence of the aggressive outsiders. Among the most prominent cheerleaders of Yehuda's actions were members of Team Moshiach, a Shabbat-affiliated outfit, describing itself as a global nonprofit, uniting Jews from around the world in acts of goodness and kindness. In the days following October 7th, Team Moshiach spearheaded a campaign to funnel military hardware to the Israeli military, even uploaded a video showing an Israeli soldier personally thanking the group for the equipment. The director of the nearby Shabbat house claimed his organization had no role in organizing the attack. Another outside agitator, Derek Palin, a local Armenian activist with a penchant for publicly performing the Sig Heil salute, who frequently posts material idolizing the Third Reich, though alliance between Zionist Jews and avowed anti-Semite might strike some as confusing. There is a long, well-documented history of collaboration, which fundamentally depend on one another for their survival. Bizarrely, Palin claimed in an interview that he only appeared at the protest because he'd seen a video of a Jewish woman on the pro-Palestinian side criticizing white people. And here you have him giving the Nazi salute. The man seemed spitting on pro-Palestinian protesters, hurling racial slurs the day prior. Was revealed to be 23-year-old David Kaminsky, a trained boxer who admitted calling students the N-word, but denied the accusation he committed violent assaults, claiming he wasn't in the vicinity of the campus during the mob attack. He's appeared on videos training with a rapper, Blueface, and was sentenced to 2 years probation for a 2022 shooting at a Las Vegas strip club. Here we have an update. The man who spat on someone and called him the N-word at UCLA has been identified as David Kaminsky. He is a boxer and owns Kaminsky Boxing Gym in Los Angeles. Aaron Cohen, an Israeli counterterrorism analyst, was embedded with police before their May 2nd raid on the encampment while shooting an undercover special for television personality Dr. Phil. The actor previously served in Duvedin, the infamous military Israeli unit upon which Netflix's notoriously propagandistic series Fauda was based, though he was accused of participating in violence directly. Shortly before the raid, he wrote on Instagram, "I just wrapped up an independent quiet infiltration operation for Dr. Phil tonight into the heart of the UCLA encampment. I'm now down here with LASD Elite SRT, staging out, preparing to make entry into the pro-terror anti-Semitic encampment." Also present were members of Megan M., an LA-based Jewish private security firm founded in 2017 by Yossi Elfert, a mixed martial art fighter turned Shabbat rabbi. Megan M., which claimed to employ 12 former Israeli and U.S. soldiers, billed itself as the only non-Jewish nonprofit organization licensed to provide physical armed security service to the West Coast of the U.S. Speaking to the L.A. Times, Eifert admitted coordinating with UCLA an April 28th counter-protest aimed at antagonizing the pro-Palestinian encampment, featuring speakers including an Israeli diplomat and a member of the California State Assembly. Footage published on social media appears to show a member of the group hulking over students and violently ripping them away from the encampment. The group maintains a close working relationship with local law enforcement. At the conclusion of a training ceremony in 2020, LAPD Commander Vic Davalos publicly declared, "I see Megan M. as the next evolution of an organized public-private first responder partnership in the community." Meanwhile, Lowkey tweets, "I see Megan M. as the next evolution of an organized public-private first responder partnership in the community." LAPD Commander Vic Davalos praises the Zionist militia group Megan Arm which is staffed by former UCLA military personnel. Did it have a role in clearing UCLA? Scott, your thoughts.
Well, again, this college campus phenomenon where they're protesting the Gaza-Palestinian genocide, which is now undeniable, the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice, and numerous other countries around the world have all come to the same conclusion. Bombing into oblivion an entire country, cities, Gaza, killing women and children, burying children, the videos of this is undeniable. It is a genocide that is self-admitted. The Israeli Talmudist obsession with visiting retribution, punishment, and hatred upon the Palestinians for Amalek, biblical reasons is laughable, if not a disgusting display of madness. And they're going onto the college campuses in America, pushing this outlawing of protests is only going to isolate the United States and Israel even more. And, people's children who go to college have a right to protest anything they want. That's part of the reason that you go to college, is to grow. But outside infiltrators, outside wherever they come from, going onto a college campus to protest, yeah, there's an argument. They have no business there. When you go to college, you're paying to be on the campus. Anyone who's not paying to be on the campus doesn't have a right to be there except by invitation. So there is a definite justification for not having outside people on the campus, especially if they're destructive. But the real destructive ones are the Zionist, Jewish, Talmudist, Israeli people that you've just described. And their major blunder, Jim, is they think like Cotton and Cruz and the rest of these fools that are just getting bags of money from Israel. They think the rest of the world and the rest of the nation actually pays attention to them, and they don't. The only people that pay attention to these ridiculous sound bites from Cruz or Cotton are the people that pay them and people on Fox News that get paid to perpetuate it. So this whole thing could implode the Republican Party. It could implode Donald Trump because we haven't seen the worst yet. The worst is going to come September, October. And Netanyahu is not going to stop. And the other nations may require another few months to let things get really bad before they rise up to stop it militarily. McGregor's talking this. But I think all of the obsession and the hatred that the Israelis are showing is only going to get worse, and it's going to isolate the American people and sow division. The Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot. And that's the real miracle of this. If the Democrats and Biden got behind and shifted their allegiance to the Muslim world, for example, if they got behind the protests against Israel, if they completely pivoted, did 180 degrees about, it would be the smartest political move they could make, because they would win 50% plus one of the American electorate. But if they don't, then there's a speculation. Not that the Democrats are any good, they're not. But the Republicans are looking extraordinarily bad, because they're hypocrites and they're violating the very principles of the American Constitution and freedom of speech. Jim?
And of course, college protests are as American as apple pie. They're taken in stride unless they're against Israel, in which case we get a boot on our head. Brian.
Well, I'm about to blow your mind here, but like I said, I watched this big Hitler documentary this weekend. And did you know that Adolf Hitler gave out over 150 commendations to Jewish military leaders that he had that were half German, half Jew, among others? They ran over 10,000 troops. Now think about that for a second. That means that in his army, there was 150 decorated leaders that were half Jewish, half German descent. And if you listen to his speeches, it's not all anti-Jew, it's anti-Zionist. Mm-hmm. He did make a distinction. Mm-hmm. So the propaganda of this sort of class-based war that's just by skin color and blood type just isn't, it's not true. How could 150 people remain fighting inside the military with over 10,000 people for the National Socialist Party if they were being hunted down and exterminated on a daily basis? The whole propaganda thing is an absolute farce, I believe. And I believe it's just simply made up to be a boogeyman scenario where, hey, you know, everybody that talks against us is an anti-Semite. You know, that term was coined in, I think, 1898 to basically put everybody in one big pot that resisted Zionism.
Excellent, gentlemen. Thank you for a wonderful discussion today. Don, take us out.
Do I have to take us out? I hope so, and hopefully we can take us out on a good note. But boy, the lying and all this stuff that's going on these days is something that you've got to learn about. So thank you for watching, folks, and please share this. We appreciate your comments, but share this widely, because if you don't do it, none of your friends will see this. So thank you so much for today, and we'll come back next week. This was May 20th. And next week is going to be Memorial Day. Hopefully we'll have some good things to memorialize. But come on back next week, but share this. And thank you, gentlemen. I salute you.